Hello, we're back. We haven't released an episode since January because we've been just so busy teaching and writing and reflecting and planning.
But we do hope to be a little bit more consistent with our podcast recording. We have, like Pauline said, been very, very busy, and I will admit the book has taken most of our attention in spring, in addition to our teaching, but every free moment we had was focused on the book. And so we wanted to do a welcome back episode of sorts just to catch everybody up and let everybody know what we've been doing and get us back on the path of publishing our podcast episodes, because we've got a great series of 7 episodes coming focused on our spring 2022 work with our WRH 325 students when they read Macbeth, and they did this really interesting co-planning unit plan process.
So what have we been up to? If you've been following along, you know that we have a book contract with the National Council of Teachers of English, NCTE. And of course, we were delayed in our production because of COVID and teaching remotely. But as of today, our manuscript draft is with the editor, and we are hoping to get page proofs within the next few weeks. So we've done all the heavy lifting. We've dotted the I's and crossed the T's. And now we are just in the final phase of getting this book out into the world.
I think the thing that we did not anticipate, other than our, to be frank, childish understandings of the timeline of the editorial process and the entire publishing process, is the amount of minutia and the detail that goes into writing the book and the whole book process, down from consistency in our language, the choices we make with terms and vocabulary, securing photographs for the book.
Even down to formatting, because we created this multimodal strategy that we've named 4I Multimodal Strategy, FIMS. And in it, we've identified 4 words that all start with I. And as we've gone through different rounds of editing, of course, sometimes we italicize the word, sometimes we put it in bold, sometimes we did both. Because of course, we're writing different sections. We didn't just sit down and write the book start to finish. So I really applaud the team, the editors, you know, our series editor, Kathy Fleischer, who paid attention to details like that as they were taking in our drafts and reading through things, because it wasn't on our radar. I mean, we were trying to draft quickly, efficiently, you know, while teaching, while working on other things. And so, of course, like you're saying, that minutia, you know, certainly we appreciate that level of detail, you know, even certain citations where we were in the groove of writing. If you're in the flow of writing, you know what we're talking about here. But sometimes we would know we were citing Eisner or Dewey or, you know, whoever, and we would just put the parentheses in like citation. And then, you know, sometimes we would circle back and complete the citation, but other times it was the editor saying, you know, you really need to finish that up and like give us the actual citation. Yeah, this has been a labor of love, and I'm thrilled to just be at the tail end of this process. I think that, you know, we're excited. The plan as of right now is that the book will come out late October, early November. Definitely hoping that we stick to that production schedule and that it's out in time for NCTE so that we can share it when we're all in Anaheim face to face again for the first time in 3 years.
One of the behind the scenes things, like that with, so we teach together undergraduates, but a large part of my life in my teaching is teaching graduate students, master students and doctoral students. And part of my teaching with them is looking at their relationship with reading and writing, because so much of graduate study are those two activities. And one of the things that having our book project on, you know, either on the back burner or working on it right now, was it gave me a little bit of street cred. It gave me a little bit of, I could really say to students, no, I understand what it's like to have writer's block or to not be able to find that citation, like you were saying, or all of that, like the book formatting and the minutia stuff. It kept us authentic. Like we wanted to write a book that was multimodal so that it had, yes, like images and things in the text of the book, but we all also wanted to make the book interactive. So we decided from the very beginning to input these QR codes that would allow the reader to jump to a video or a recording. And that sounds fantastic when you're proposing a book. Fast forward 2 years later, when you and I had to go get away for a long weekend, or maybe it wasn't a long weekend, but it just felt like a long weekend, just to put our heads down and focus on the edits and focus on putting all those QR codes together. I think we only had like 70 or 80 of them, which I know that sounds ridiculous. 70 or 80 is a large number, but it took 48 hours of just heads down work to put all of those together. And I'm really looking forward to, shout out to Jen Rogers, our GA, for helping us create those and secure the links and everything. But it is a lot of work. And you kind of understand, you hear from your colleagues about their writing and the struggle with deciding when to use images and whether or not to use QR codes and things. And you understand it adds a whole extra layer of work that I hope it will be beneficial for those who get to read or choose to read the book. But it was a lot of work doing all that background stuff. Now, in addition to our book, we've also been, and this has honestly sort of consumed more of our free time, and maybe another reason why we haven't spent a lot of time doing, getting into in front of the microphone to do our recordings, is we've been trying to pivot and switch into our next phase of our work together. We have taught this class, the 325 class, and that inspires this podcast, and inspired the book for 6 or 7 years now. And we are already feeling the pull to transition to what our next research project is going to be. So over the past year or so in our free time, one of the things we've been looking at is what that next project is going to be. And we're pretty sure we're closing in on what it is. It's going to be some intersection of arts and arts-based pedagogies, study abroad and or study local. And we've even done a couple of small trips with some of our students to do like a pilot study of sorts. But in addition to that, we've been trying to figure out how to secure some additional funding to help support that research. Eventually, the whole goal is to do a study abroad with our secondary education students, undergrad students. But we're trying to be really thoughtful about it, and we're trying to be really mindful about how we create this process. So we've been working on that for a year and a half.
So I'm super excited about our new project with the study abroad for several reasons. I have always focused on arts-based pedagogy, and so this is an opportunity to layer that on top of our multimodal work. We've talked about possibly building an app for teachers that would kind of guide them and provide them with a lot of resources for different arts experiences, museums, and such. And then also, very selfishly, I've never been abroad. I've mostly just stayed on North America, US, Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean. So I'm excited to kind of plan out professionally and personally. Like, I think this will be an adventure for me. And I know you've said, you know, travel to Europe has changed your life and your mindset. And I think it will change mine. I think it will enhance mine. And I think when we frame it for our future teachers, it will shape them in a way that will impact their classrooms for the better. I think that it will help them kind of see a broader picture, and where we sort of fit as Americans, as teachers, as just across the globe. Like, we're not the only ones. And, you know, how do we think about curriculum when we're thinking globally?
I mentioned that we've done two trial runs. We took a group of students, one to New York City, the other to Washington, D.C., and we tried to plan different kinds of, just on weekends, and we just tried to do like one sort of museum experience, one musical theater or theater experience, and then in our plans, we had wanted to do more like open air or nature, natural spaces. We haven't done that as much, but we did that in fall 2021. Is that right? October?
Yeah. We did October and November, right? Because we did DC in October, and we kind of, with DC, it was interesting because we were limited in terms of theater. So Hadestown was running at the Kennedy Center, and we took that opportunity. It was over our fall break. And so we looked into those tickets, thought it was going to be awesome to see it at the Kennedy Center, which it was. Side note, the Kennedy Center is an amazing, beautiful facility. And we paired it then thinking about racial representation. And so before we saw Hadestown, we went to the Smithsonian African American Museum. And then the next day, we did the American History Museum as part of the Smithsonian Complex. And we did spend some outside time on the Washington Mall, you know, going through the monuments and walking through that space, the reflecting pool. You and I went down that way in the Lincoln Monument. And I thought it was an amazing experience. I think one of the things we learned from DC was that even though it was four students and us, so just a small group of six, it took a lot of time to move from place to place. So we thought about that. We made note of that for our future planning. We took advantage of the public transportation in DC. We had a really cool dinner where we talked about like what we had already seen and what we were going to see that night. Of course, we thought about Hadestown being based in Greek mythology, but told with an updated flair and an amazing music. I remember coming away from that in that unique conference feel where you're exhausted and energized all at the same time, because I think my mind was just bubbling with ideas and what would we do with this and how would we sort of bottle this up and figure out a way to, you know, seek out university support and build a study abroad with these ideas as our foundation.
And the reason why we're doing this in this way is starting, we say study abroad, but it really is like a study local to abroad. Or we're still working on the terminology because we realize many of our students have not even traveled around local cities and local areas and seen large cultural centers in the United States, like New York, DC, Baltimore, Philadelphia. I mean, those are just the ones that are close enough for us being located outside of Philadelphia. And so the other city that we did a trial run with was New York. We didn't do the train on this trip.
I think we waited and then the train tickets ended up being just astronomical prices. So we drove. I drove a few students and you drove a few students.
And that completely changed the experience.
It did.
By driving and not having to worry about the train. We did MoMA. That was the first thing we did. We arrived early Saturday morning and went and did MoMA. Then we sort of let them have a bit more free time in the afternoon. That was one of the things they told us they wanted from DC. And then we regathered and had dinner. And went and saw Moulin Rouge. Now, the focus for New York was gender and femininity and women. And so that was one of the best choices we could get. I think the other we were looking at was Six.
We thought about Six.
But the tickets
at that point, the tickets were so – they were like $500.
It was extremely
expensive.
That was our
budget because I think we – spent about $2,000 in DC and we had $2,000 left for New York and the Six tickets.
Right.
Or the tickets for Six, the musical, would have just used up our entire budget.
Right.
So we planned accordingly. And I thought Moulin Rouge was a good choice to look at. The representation of the female body, one of the things that I could appreciate about the show is that unlike a presentation by the Rockettes, say, the bodies we saw on stage for Moulin Rouge were varied in shape, size, skin tone, and similar costumes, right? With the Rockettes, you get the same costume and basically the same size, shape, woman. And so I could appreciate with Moulin Rouge, especially taking a group of young students who all happened to be female on both of these trips, that they saw that also. And then the next morning in New York, we had our minds blown with the dinner party.
At the Brooklyn Museum.
At the Brooklyn Museum. We had heard about this art installation from a colleague of ours at Westchester. Shout out to Dr. Karen Gedge, social studies education. When she heard we were doing this, she said, well, you have to go see this at the Brooklyn Museum. And we didn't even know what the dinner party was. But, whoa, it was amazing. I
would say this was the highlight not only for us, but for the students as well. We spent a lot of time there in the museum and in that space, so much so that we paused. They had these rooms. I think it was like a reading room that was off from on the side. But we actually stopped and sat for a half hour and just talked with everyone, with the students we had. There was only four students with us. It was us, your sister, and our four students. But we just needed to pause and stop and think and process what we were seeing and feeling out loud.
Yeah, so we can link to this art exhibit. It is permanently displayed at the Brooklyn Museum. But just to give you a sense, it is a huge room with a platform, a white platform with gold lettering, and on the lettering is all names of women throughout history. On that platform that's shaped in a triangle shape, there is a table, and across it there are 99 place settings of women throughout history, and each place setting uniquely captures the time period from which the woman is from, an art design of the plate, the placemat, and it's beautiful. It really is. It's so unique. It led us to an interesting conversation about the fact that this exhibit was created in the 1970s. And so I think one of the last, like if you think of it as a timeline, I think one of the last play settings is Georgia O'Keeffe. So we talked about, you know, who's missing and did anyone consider, you know, women of color? Did you notice any of the names and people represented, you know, did they represent other parts of the world? And so we had a really amazing conversation. We talked about, I mean, they just jumped right into like, how would you teach this? What could you do? Could you give students a blank place setting and could they pick someone and do research and then sort of create their own place setting to represent that person? So it really, they were, you know, I know we offered them two free trips, but I feel like they offered us so much information and feedback and just genuine enthusiasm for our work and our curiosity. Yeah, that definitely Hadestown and the dinner party exhibit were two of the highlights for me coming out of these two weekends.
So we've been trying to figure out how to make this research project, this study abroad and the infusion of arts and culture, how is that going to show up in our work and in our teaching? Is it going to be a separate class? Are we going to try and build it into a new version of 325 that we've been working on for a couple of years as we transition out of English and fully into secondary ed? So that's, you can hear in our conversation that how much we've been involved and invested in this, but it's not yet in the public sharing phase. We're still trying to find our footing and still trying to find the right language to describe what it is we're up to.
Yeah. So if you're doing this work and you listen to our podcast, you know, please get in touch. And if you, you know, if you've thought through arts-based pedagogy, if you already conduct a study abroad, or if you, you know, do sort of teacher field trips, I mean, that's an idea that we've been playing with also to get some of the local pieces involved, please reach out to us because we, you know, we're still in that brainstorming phase, you know, where you're super excited about a project, you just have to figure out how to make it happen. That's where we currently are. I think we've been in that, like, as we were finishing our draft of the book and then it was sent out to the reviewers, that's when we kind of jumped on board with this because, you know, if you're in academia, you know that to get a project funded 2 years from now, you need to be writing grant applications and you know, considering your university support now to make that happen within the next year or two. So that's why we started to get into this new idea, you know, like the, as Jed Bartlett says on West Wing, what's next? And that's the kind of teachers we are. What's next? What's our next idea? What's our next project?
Exactly. Exactly. Thanks for listening to this welcome back episode. We apologize for not being as vocal and having as many podcasts published. We're excited to be back at the microphone and excited to share our upcoming projects and our students' podcasts. And those will be dropping over the rest of the summer.